Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Streamed and Screened, an entertainment podcast about movies and TV from Lee Enterprises. I'm Terry Lipschitz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee and co-host of the program with Bruce Miller, longtime entertainment reporter. And we're back at the back end of the Olympics here. We are wrapping things up. Actually, by the time this episode drops, we'll be just past the closing ceremonies. But they are still ongoing now. But yeah, here we are at more Olympics.
I'm trying to get through withdrawal here as it is, just to be able to, you know, it, what a wild, who would have thought the way things have turned out? Because the quad god, everybody was predicting the quad god, he's right. Got, right? And here you get a guy that I've never seen him before, but I'm happy for him. I'm glad he won the gold, but it points up that old saw that it's one day only. And that's where the problem goes. Same thing with Chalk and Bates. Everybody said Chalk and Bates are going to win the gold. They ended up with silver. And if you happen to watch on Netflix, there was a 3-part miniseries called Glitter and Gold Ice Dancing. And it was about the three who were kind of in the mix for the finals. And Chalk and Bates, they kind of said, well, it kind of looks like it's their time. There's this couple from Canada that had been in just as long, were having the same kind of issues. And then there's this upstart, Cizeron and Laurent, whatever her last name is. She's got a high-powered name. But they were, you know, they've only been together since March, so we're not really so sure about that. But the miniseries was really good to get a sense of what the personalities were like. Because you see Madison Chalk as a real controller. You can see that, you know, whatever the husband wants to do, he ain't saying it. He's keeping quiet because if she says we're wearing that long skirt, that was a big problem. She's wearing the long skirt. I would have said ditching the skirt the first day she brought it out and they tripped on it. But there you go. The Canadians, they decided to pull back an old program that they hadn't done for a while. And that was interesting to see, too, because you think, oh, if they go back to some old thing, they're not getting anywhere with that. So that was interesting to see. And then to see how these newcomers, who both had different partners, Guillaume Cizeron, had won the last one. And he had a different partner. She has since written a book that says he was too controlling and there were too many issues there. And so, you know, what's the truth there? There's something about some abuse thing with her ex-partner, but these two were friends and they decided that they would get together and just see what happens because they weren't ready to retire. Well, they get on ice and they've got those kind of moves that look like an ice dancer. And you see them going back and forth with these three couples. It's still on and it's one you should look at. And you get a sense of them. You get a sense of, oh, I understand now why those two won. Because they were a little freer, a little more artistic, and a little less kind of driven about everything. Because if they didn't win, they didn't win. You know, we had that before when Torval and Dean came back. If you remember, they let professionals back in. At one
point, right.
The best they got was a bronze, maybe?
Yeah.
You see this, what have we got to lose? We've got nothing to lose. Now, they need to do another episode that talks about the judging. Because was that French judge helping them in a way that they shouldn't have? Or was there more there? I don't know. But it's fascinating to watch. They talk about the costuming. The amount of effort they put into all of this is unbelievable. And Chalk and Bates had not even undone the last set of costumes they wore or their Ralph Lauren team outfits from the 2022 games. They were like hidden away because they didn't want to think about that because they didn't win and they didn't get anywhere with it. And you go, oh, my God, really? Is this how this goes? But I guess they just get so caught up in this world where it's not reality at all. It's a real kind of manufactured And it'd be a great mini series too. I mean,
a
reality series where they're fighting to get through this stuff. But yes, it's so good. I love that. That was a good kind of pause for me from all these other things. Jordan Stoltz, I think, is a god. And I'm so thrilled that he won so far 2 gold and 1 silver in the speed skating. He doesn't seem to be fazed by anything. And I love the way he's just kind of going with the flow. Same with Michaela Schifrin. The idea that she won gold. Thank you, Jesus, that happened.
Right.
And then she said, the first thing she said is dad. And she tells her story. And if you hear that in any of these broadcasts, she talks about how important it was that her dad was, you know, he got her going on all of this. And then he died and he wasn't there for this one. And she thinks that maybe this is a, you know, this was kind of the letting go or whatever, but it was a good thing she got it. And she seemed grateful for it too. But to see some of these other countries where you, good luck, what is your option there? If I went to the Netherlands, I would think, oh, if you're not speed skating, you're nobody.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a country like, really? Wow. Is speed skating that big in the Netherlands that everybody's doing it?
But speed skating, that's what you're going for.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I'm not going there because I've never been there, so I don't know what the vibe is. But and they've got really hardcore people. I always worried about like communist countries where if they didn't win, is that a bad thing? Is it suddenly
right.
country disowns you and you're not one of our people. So that's
right.
always kind of comes into play when you're watching these things. But, you know, I've seen so many videos on Instagram, you name it, any of the social medias where they're grading the food at the village, or they're unpacking the clothes, or they're talking pin trading. And I'm surprised that pin trading is back. It was big when I went in 88 to the Olympics. But it was new then. It was not a thing. And it's back now with a vengeance. But I think they're all creating their own pins so that then they have kind of currency to trade with.
Yeah. Did you? I read a story that there was, it was, I think, one or two people, a couple friends maybe from the LA area. They were heading to Italy basically to trade pins. And they were packing something like 30,000 pins with them. Like, it's crazy. But, you know, I was thinking about it. You know, you're going to these countries, right? So it's, you have airfare, you've got hotel accommodations, you have to eat. It's not cheap, right? This is not an inexpensive vacation. So if you want some souvenirs and maybe even a bunch of souvenirs, this is probably one of the more inexpensive types of souvenirs you can get, is if you can get into whether you're just pin trading, or maybe you spend a few dollars and buy some pins. It's kind of a unique hobby that's very specific to the Olympics, and probably it lets you accumulate a lot of mementos in a short period of time at a relatively low cost.
Well, and you know, some of the U.S. ones are trading off some of the clothes they got.
Sure.
Because that's good. But when I went to the Olympics, I thought, oh, I want to get a Russian one. I need a Russian pin. I found a Russian pin, but it didn't have the right year on it. Somebody had some bogus ones, and I got it. I spent the money for it. But the idea of trading, once I got one, I would never trade it. I would have something that, you know, what is the thing I wouldn't want?
But, right.
Now it's that Russian pin that was no good. But so it was a different thing. And then what do you do with the pins after you get home? They go in a binder, or you have the lanyard or whatever.
Right. I mean, well, they're, you know, like most people who accumulate things, they just end up sitting and collecting dust because what else are you going to do with it? Right.
Well, and now if you're thinking about it, the 2028 Olympics, they're starting to put the tickets on sale.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jump now. You can't wait. It's just like concerts. You have to be ready at least a year in advance, or else you're getting a bad seat.
Yeah. I know somebody that's going. They entered the lottery, and I don't know if the whole family of five is going to go, or if it's just a couple of them or what, but it's a fun time. It's been an interesting Olympics. You know, I think You know, every time there's an Olympics, like I think back to, you know, like a Dan Jansen falling or just somebody tripping or getting injured. There's always been this, there's always folks that, you know, they're hyped up. You remember like, what was it? Dan or Dave, right?
Yes. It was
like way back.
Decathlon. Yeah,
the decathlon, right? From, I don't know what it was, the 92 Olympics. Who's going to win, Dan or Dave? And I think one of them didn't even qualify for the Olympics, and the other one kind of fell short.
Right.
But it's always, so there's always this hype of like, and when you hype people up, then it's when they have that miscue, which inevitably, because these are athletics, people, they mess up or they just have a bad day, or somebody, maybe they don't have a bad day. Maybe they have a really good day. You know, like with Jordan Stoltz, when he got the silver, and when he was heavily favored to win a third gold, you just had somebody else who had a better day than he did. You know, it's not like he underperformed, somebody else overperformed. So it's, you get this, you know, hype, right? And the thing that I see different now compared to 10, 20 years ago is the mental aspect of it, where athletes are saying that, you know, the mental toll it's taking on them. And you wonder, should these athletes maybe get off of social media before they go to these things? Like, I'm going to just deactivate everything, right? Like, I'm going to turn off everything from Facebook to, I was going to call it Twitter, but X to Instagram to everything. I'm just going to go radio silence and tune everything out, because I feel as if athletes today are so consumed with social media and what people are thinking and perceptions and everything that it's almost getting inside their heads. It's almost worse than anything else before.
And it's a way for them to make money. Because
right.
If you get the, you know, if you get enough sponsors or whatever you would call that, where you can make some bucks off it, and then you have a brand, you're trying to sell
right.
a brand. It's like way out of, no, I don't want to mess with this junk. I don't want to show you how I get ready in the morning. I don't want to do any of that stuff. And I think really the ones who, remember how they would wait and they wouldn't come to the Olympics until maybe 2 or 3 days before they start, before they
right.
had a competition. And I think that's a better way of doing it. I remember in the, again, the 88 Olympics, where Liz Manley, who was from Canada, they told her she couldn't be around the games. They said, you're going to go somewhere else, and so that then you're not distracted by all of this. And she
right.
did. She got a silver medal, and they were yeah. not counting on that. And I think that's a good thing. I also, if they're that rich, you know, because some are, get a hotel room. And then have somebody watch so that nobody's trying to talk. And I would say, I'm not doing any interviews until it's over. I'll do it yeah. then.
Well, right. And then, you know, you look at like the U.S. men's basketball team. That's a group that pretty much stayed off campus. They were renting
right.
hotels and not staying in, because you can't. You're too famous. This Olympics, I think one of the more controversial situations has been Eileen Gu, who is American born.
Yeah.
She goes to Stanford, right? Raised in the US, but she's representing China, and she's also a social media personality. There's been a lot of complaints about her with the publicity and the interviews and all this stuff. And then, you know, obviously there's, I think a lot of folks are upset because she's an elite athlete and representing China instead of the US. So that probably doesn't help. But, you know, again, it's always a funny thing to me with that, is it does kind of go both ways, right? You know, it's you don't mind it, I guess, when it's an athlete who would have been, you know, the 33rd person qualifying for the US, but they decide to based on their Italian heritage or some other heritage, they're going to go compete for another country. Well, that's fine, but you know, because it's China, it's not. But then again, too, there's obviously a lot of issues, human rights questions and stuff, and about China. So there's so many different aspects to that story. But on the flip of it, we for years as in this country have welcomed the oppressed to represent us. You know, we took advantage of a lot of Eastern European athletes that decided to defect from Germany or wherever during the Cold War and happily, you know,
have
right?
A partner that's from Russia.
Right.
It is what it is. It's interesting to see that, but maybe the U.S. wasn't making an offer that was as lucrative or as encouraging as
right.
another country. And you know, you've got to look at it. They get an attention thing every 4 years.
Yeah.
What happens between there? And you need training money to be able to do these kinds of things. Now, she's right. a whole different thing because she's a model and all that, and she's got money. She doesn't need to worry about it. But it was nice of her to honor her as her mother.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, let it be. We have a snowboarder who won a silver for the United States a few years ago and is now representing Great Britain.
Yeah.
And I think it was because there was younger talent that probably would have beat him off the team if he tried to get in the United States. But Great Britain probably doesn't have that strong of a team. He got on. Now, I don't
right.
know how well he did, but the idea, for a lot of them, it's another boost of attention. You'll get it, and maybe that'll help them get to the next level. I don't, you know, who knows?
Right.
I would be so thrilled just getting the clothes. The free clothes they give you, that's enough for me. And the idea that you get to go eat somewhere, I wouldn't complain about the food at all, even if it was bad. But if I got to a cafeteria where it's like, have as much as you want, you're fine.
Right.
And then they're giving things to these Olympics. Oh, I love it. It's great. But you look at it and you think, well, if I didn't get gold, was I a loser? And I think bronze, you're just grateful.
Yep.
Silver, was it that close? And, you know, and again, it's all based on the day. This is so stupid that people don't point this out more often is, you know, if you had stomach flu in the morning and then you're supposed to do something in the afternoon, you're still going to have stomach flu. You're still going to feel tough and you aren't at the top of your game. I would have to have somebody make sure that they were cooking for me the whole time, so I wasn't getting any kind of this tainted food. The minute I was done with my category, whatever it might be, then I'd go to town and just eat everything and be the social one. But until then I would just, I'd be afraid of somebody giving me some flu.
Right.
You know, I shake hands with somebody or I talk to a reporter. The reporter seems to have COVID. And then am I coming down with it? It's too much chance. There's too much. Maybe they need to reinvent the games into a, you know, best of. And they do it every year. And then 1 year they give the medals out. But I don't know. It's in that glitter and gold, too. They show you all those lead up. Competitions, the Grand Prix things. And they have to win one of those to be able to get into the finals. And that's the goal, because if you don't get in the finals, you're not really considered a contender. The other thing that's interesting is that some of those judges come and watch their rehearsals.
And
you know, was that right? Well, they know in advance what you're able to do or what you can't do.
Yeah.
So I don't know that that's fair. But
the judging has changed a lot, though, because you remember the old days of judging. It's, you know, they're holding up the signs, right? Like 10
right.
or 9.5. Right. It's gotten a lot more scientific, I guess, where you submit your program in advance and your program, depending on the twists and turns and moves you make, it gives you a calculated score, calculated maximum score. And then as you perform, you get, you know, additions and subtractions. And then there's, of course, some judging on it. So I think it's a little less open to scandal like it may have been in the past. But it's still, there is that human element still in it.
If you're scoring the one team lower than everybody, and then you score the team from your country higher than everybody.
Yeah.
That's a little suspect. And I think they should call into question those kinds of judges, because they had the scandal how many cycles ago, and they gave 2 gold medals out because they did say, it seems a little suspicious here. Let's look at this again.
Right.
So,
Well, and then the big controversy too with curling, where the double touch of the stone, and they're bringing in the judge. But this is like a gentlemanly sport, right? Where we score each other, we judge it ourselves. They bring in the official, and I'm like, I'm seeing this, and now me, as an official, I'm somebody that umpires baseball and softball, and I have to go through training, and I have to take tests, and I'm seeing like the official who's there doesn't really exactly know the rules, and I'm just kind of mortified by this whole thing. Like, how do you have officials in an Olympic level sport who don't know the rules, right?
Well, but then when the one starts swearing with words that we wouldn't use if we were in
right.
public, and you're going,
yep.
"Wow, this is really
wow.
something." And it's a Canadian yep. that's using the words.
I know
Canadians were nicer than that, but
I know I thought that was hilarious. Here you are.
Yeah.
So what else, before we wrap up the show, what else do you have on your agenda here?
Well, you know, I have been watching all new series. I watched The Fall and Rise of Reggie Dinkins. That's the thing with Tracy Morgan and Daniel.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Interesting. I would not make Tracy Morgan the star of any show, but Daniel Radcliffe is pretty equal in this, and he's playing a documentary filmmaker. It's a fascinating look at the world of sports and what happens when the applause disappears.
Yeah.
And then Scrubs, which is, I think, having two episodes to begin with to kind of get you back into it. And then you find out what happened to these people, and they set it up very much like The Pit, where
okay.
JD, the Zach Braff character, is in charge of a bunch of young doctors.
Okay.
And that's kind of fun. And then I've watched, there's Young Sherlock, The Artful Dodger, there Night Agent and then Night Manager that are coming. Paradise is in there. So it's a lot of stuff that's coming. And I think this is, and then all of those big, the Yellowstone reboot.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot that's on the table, but it's, we got to get through the Olympics first, I think.
Right. Yeah. I know Night Agent was one. My wife and I watched the first two seasons, and I thought season one was a little bit better than season two, but I think we're still going to hop into season three once that one drops, and we did see Paradise. We ended up watching season one of that. It was an interesting premise, you know, another one of these post-apocalyptic type of
right
sci-fi shows. I am kind of curious about season two to see how that comes together. I mean, we love Sterling K. Brown. I mean, he's always a great actor to watch, but the show, you know, that it feels like the type of show that can quickly jump the shark. You know, it's like season one could be strong, but depending on which direction season two takes, like, you know, if you think back even to a show like Westworld on HBO,
right,
the first season or two, how amazing it was, but then once they left that contained theme park universe and entered the real world, it became a lot more bizarre and a lot less enjoyable. So we'll kind of see, you know, where does Paradise go. But yeah, you know, it's a lot of shows are coming with the wrap up of the Olympics and post NFL, and you know, it's kind of a prime time now to get some of these shows back. So looking forward to some of those things. By the way, did you see we got a trailer for the new Mandalorian and Grogu movie? I know we've gotten some teasers, but they dropped the full 2-minute trailer recently.
What do you think?
I am looking forward to this. It's
but will it go there? Is this a one shot and we're done?
Well, this is, yeah, I mean, this is kind of like tying that series together. I don't know if there's going to be anything more after this with Mando and Grogu. I also heard that this is like the least expensive Star Wars movie filmed in forever. Like, since Disney bought it, it's the cheapest movie ever made. So, or they're kind of reining in, because some of those effects have gotten a little bit bizarre.
Yeah.
It sounds like, you know, the showrunners here, Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, are running a tighter ship on this, and maybe we'll get a just more like story. Go back to the classics where we're telling a story and relying less on special effects. But the trailer, there was a lot of Easter eggs in this trailer. Don't have time to get into every single one of them here, but there were some rumors about, Martin Scorsese being in the movie, and he's there in the trailer. He voices an alien. And it does sound very Marty, like very New York Marty. So
he's just a voice. He's not wearing an outfit.
Right. You won't recognize him, but when you, I'll tell you, it's this character where Mandalorian drops a coin down looking for information, and it's like, yeah, for that kind of money, I'll tell you what you need to know. And then he makes a reference to, I think, like one of the huts, like Road of the Hut. And he's like, gotta go. And he slams down the front of his shop and takes off. It was kind of interesting to hear that. I don't know what the story was, how he got involved with it, if it was just a friendly type of thing or what. But, an interesting little cameo. And you got Sigourney Weaver in the movie. So, I'm looking forward to it.
Just a drive-by.
No, she's got a relatively – she's like a – I don't want to say rebel, because this takes place after the fall of the Empire. So I guess she's more of like a New Republic – commander or something.
Remember when he was in one of them and like,
walked? Oh yeah.
That's what I'm worry about. If you're just putting him in to put the name in and then kind of get the rub off. Yeah, no,
I think it's supposed to be a little bit more of a full role, but again, we'll see come May 22nd.
So. All right. I can hardly wait. Well, and that could be a good summer kickoff.
Right. That's what I'm hoping for. They have not released a Star Wars movie into theaters in years because
what's made for. That's what they're there for.
Right. I know. We need to get back into theaters with this franchise. So we'll see. But that's where we're at. Anything else on the horizon for you?
Well, there's a little show called The Oscars coming up, and I think
we'll
recap that pretty soon. Because they've kind of gone underground at this point. We don't hear a lot about them because what's taking all the air? It's the Olympics.
The Olympics. So, yep, there you go. That's going to be a busy weekend, but I think that's also Selection Sunday for the NCAA tournament. So, it is going to be crazy, 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 crazy weekend coming up. So on that note, thank you for listening, and we'll be back again next week with another episode of Streamed and Screened.